Welcome to Lake Country Unitarian Universalist Church. It's nice to see so many smiling faces here this morning. My name is Patty Walker, and I'm this morning's representative from the church board. We have a variety of announcements about church life and activities, and please read the additional announcements in the order of service. We will again have a rummage and plant sale on Friday and Saturday, May 14th and 15th. This will be our fourth sale and a good way to bring in outside money for a fundraiser. We will need your help in donating items, organizing, pricing, advertising, and selling. Read about it in the April newsletter. We also need two people to co-chair this event, see Esther or Kaz. Remember to give them a hand. Fill out a hand in the pew to recognize a person or group who contributes to the success of LCUUC. I invite you to greet those sitting around you. If you are visiting us today, we particularly welcome you. Please sign the guest ledger on the visitor's table in the foyer. There are a variety of information available on the table about our church and Unitarian Universalism. Help yourself to any that interests you. I'll be in the social hall after the service if you have any questions about our church. Or if you've been visiting for a while and would like information about becoming a member, I'd be happy to talk with you about that as well. If you are visiting with us with your children, it is our custom for the children to remain with us until after the offertory, at which time they go to the religious education classes. Your child is welcome to join them or remain in the service. If you would like to go along to observe your child's class, please do so. The nursery is just out the doors to my right and across the entryway if there's a need for child care during the service. We always enjoy getting to know our guests. If any members have bought guests today, we would be pleased if you would introduce them. Or if any guests have bought themselves and feel comfortable introducing themselves, this would be a good time to do so. We really enjoy meeting you. Welcome. Welcome. Everyone is invited to gather in the social hall after the service for refreshments and conversation. Conversation corner is a good place to gather for further discussion of the service. Please put your cell phones on silence mode during the service. I hope you find this morning's service inspiring. Our speaker today is Bob Conley, one of the founders of Common Ground, a southeastern Wisconsin affiliate of the Industrial Areas Foundation, or IAF. He has organized local efforts for social change as a director of IAF organizations in Wisconsin, New York, and Pennsylvania. As part of our stewardship campaign, we would like to welcome Leanne Rigoli to the front to share her testimonial.
Hi, my name's Leanne, and I volunteered to take a moment today and tell you all why I am here at Lake Country Unitarian Universalist Church. I believe that it's really important for my daughter, Mona, to grow up with a really strong spiritual foundation and to be able to participate in a community that is caring and safe. And the first Well, a few years ago when Mona started getting old enough and we realized it was time to make sure that we could give her those things, Dave, my husband, they're both here. We did a lot of research. We looked around on the internet. We found this particular group, and we decided to give it a try. And the first time we came here, it happened to be the first day of services for that year. And after service, we went into the social hall, and the RE table had been set up for signing your kids up for religious education. So Carlin Wagner at the time was the RE director, so we had a nice talk with her, and Helen was around, Helen Barra, and some other people, and we realized that all of the things that were important, well, certainly a lot of them that were important to us, are important to the people that are here in this organization, and things like having a really broad religious education, of course. Mona gets to learn about all the different faiths. She gets the opportunity to find her own spiritual path and learn how to care for other people, care for the earth, and also learn about the seven UU principles, which we found to be very similar to our own. She gets to be part of a supportive community with new traditions and rituals, learning how to be helped and to help others. And, of course, lots of different creative ways to have fun, which is really important to us. And the last item that was significant was all the opportunities in this group for Mona to participate in communities outside of this one, including participating in things like going to the Heifer Ranch this summer, kids that have gone to Colorado to help out, and youth cons, cleaning up the freeways, helping out at shelters and food, serving food and that sort of thing. They're all great experiences. We're really happy to have Mona have those opportunities. Anyway, that's what was important to us that got us here. There are a ton of other reasons why we continue to stay, why I continue to stay. But if you want to know about those, you'll have to catch me at another time.
Good morning. Our Justice Sunday service opens with some words from Rabindranath Tagore. These are my adaptation of verse 35 from his devotional poem cycle, Gitanjali. where the mind is without fear and the head is held high, where knowledge is free, where the world has not been broken up into fragments by narrow domestic walls, where words come out from the depth of truth, where tireless striving stretches its arms towards perfection, where the clear stream of reason has not lost its way into the dreary desert sand of dead habit, where the mind is led forward into ever-widening thought and action. Into that heaven of freedom, let us awaken. At times, our own light goes out and is rekindled by a spark from another person. Each of us has cause to think with deep gratitude to those who have lighted the flame within us. Those words are from Albert Schweitzer, and your response is printed in your order of service. Christy will play it through once, and you can remain seated. So for today's story for all ages, we're going to try things a little bit differently. The story is The Quilt Maker's Gift by Jeff Brumbo. Terry Copeland will be reading, and Betsy Foss Campbell will come up front with the kids and help you get seated in a way that you can see the story on the screen.
I'm going to read from the back, but Betsy will be up front. And this is such a beautifully illustrated book that we decided to try and put it up on the screen for you. So we have some quilts up front, some from Leanne, that are homemade in my store bought, that are going to help you get into this story. It's a story of the joy of giving. There once was a quilt maker who kept a house in a blue, misty mountain up high. Even the oldest great-great-grandfather could not recall a time when she was not up there sewing day after day. Here and there, wherever the sun warmed the earth, it was said she made the prettiest quilt anyone had ever seen. The blues seemed to come from the deepest of the ocean, the whites from the northern snow, and the greens and purples from abundant wildflowers and reds, oranges, and pinks from the most wonderful sunsets. Some said there was magic in her fingers. Some whispered that the needles and cloth were gifts from the bewitched. And still others said the quilts really felt earth on the shoulders of passing angels. Many people climbed the mountains with pockets of gold, hoping to buy one of her quilts, but she would not sell them. "I give my quilts to those who are poor or homeless," she told all who knocked on her door. "They were not for the rich." On the darkest and coldest nights, the woman would make her way down the mountain to the town below. There she would wander the cobblestone streets until she came upon someone sleeping outside in the chill. She would then take up a newly finished quilt and wrap it around their shoulders, tuck them in tight, tiptoe away. Then the very next morning, with a steaming cup of blackberry tea, she would begin a new quilt. Now at the time, there lived a very powerful and greedy king who liked nothing better than to receive presents. The hundreds and thousands of beautiful gifts he got for Christmas and his birthday were never enough. So he passed a law that he would celebrate his birthday twice a year. When that still wasn't enough, he ordered his soldiers to search the kingdom for new gifts. Over the years, the king came to own all the prettiest things in the world.
throughout his castle from top to bottom on shelves and boxes and closets, stacked countless things that were just there stashed. Things that shimmered and glittered and glowed, things whimsical and practical, things mysterious and magical, so many things that the king kept a list of all the things he owned. And yet, with all these marvelous treasures he enjoyed, the king never smiled. He was not happy at all. "Somewhere there must be one beautiful thing that will finally make me happy," he was often heard to say, "and I will have it." One day the soldiers rushed in the palace telling him about the wonderful quilt maker up at the mountaintop. "Why is it she's never given me one of her quilts?" "She makes them only for the poor, Your Majesty, and she will not sell them, not for any amount of money." "Well, we'll see about that," roared the king. "Bring me a horse." And up they tromped to her house. There the quilt maker merrily laughed. "My quilts are here for the poor and the needy, and I can easily see that you are neither." "I want one of those quilts," said the king. It might be the one thing that will finally make me happy." The woman thought for a moment. "Make presents of everything you own, and then I'll make a quilt for you. With each gift that you give away, I will stitch another piece in your quilt. When all your things are given away, the quilt will be finished." "Give away all my wonderful treasures?" cried the king. "I don't give things away. I take them." And with that, he ordered his soldiers to seize the beautiful star quilt. But she tossed it out the window, and a great gust of wind carried it away. The king was now very angry. He marched the woman down to town, where he had the royal iron maker make a chain of chains for her ankles, put her in a cave with a bear, and said, "Very well, then. I'll leave you here, and when the bear awakens, surely he will have a very fine breakfast of you." Later, when the bear opened his eyes and saw the woman in his cave, he stood on his hind legs and roared enough to rattle her bones. She looked up at him and sadly shaked her head. "No wonder you're so grouchy," the quilt maker said. "You've nothing but rocks on which to lay your head. Bring me some pine needles, and I'll make you a shawl. I'll make you a pillow out of my shawl." And that is what she did. Never before had someone been so kind to the bear, so he broke the chains off her ankles, and they slept the night. Now, although the king was very good, and he was not very good, and he was greedy, he was not very good at being mean. All that night he could not sleep, thinking of the poor woman in the cave. "Oh my, what have I done?" So he awoke his soldiers, who in their pajamas had to go to the cave to rescue the quilt maker. When they arrived, they found them eating a breakfast of berries and honey. Now the king became angry again. He ordered the royal island maker to build an island barely big enough for the woman to stand on her tiptoes. Once again the king asked for a quilt. And she said no again. "Very well, tonight, when you're too tired to stand, you will drown." Shortly then, a sparrow saw the woman standing, and she saw that the sparrow was very chilled. So she made a tiny little quilt for the sparrow. The sparrow was so touched that he gathered the other sparrows, and thousands of sparrows carried her from the island to a tree. Again that night the king could not sleep for thinking of what he'd done to the woman. "Oh my, what have I done?" So he awoke his sleeping soldiers, who marched in their pajamas down to the lake. But instead of finding the woman sitting on the island, she was sitting in a tree, sewing tiny purple coats for all the sparrows. "I give up. What must I do to get a quilt?" "As I said," the woman answered, "give away all of the things you own, and then I will sew a quilt for you." "I can't do that. I love all my wonderful, beautiful things." "But if they don't make you happy, what good are they?" "That's true," the king sighed, and he thought, "Oh, all right. If I must give away my treasures, then I must." The king went to his castle and searched top and bottom for something he could bear to give away. Frowning, he finally came out with a single marble. But the boy he gave it to smiled so brightly that the king went back for more. Eventually, he brought out a pile of velvet coats, and when the people paraded around pleased with the coats, the king still did not smile. But he was a bit pleased. So he fetched hundreds of waltzing blue Siamese cats and dozens of fish in clear glass. Then the king ordered his merry-go-round with real horses to be brought out. The children cried with delight and cartwheeled around him, and just the smallest of smiles began to show on the king's face. The king looked about him and saw dancing and merrymaking and the happiness of his gifts. The child took a hold of his hand, and now the king began to smile. He even laughed out loud. "How can this be? How can I feel so happy about giving things away? Bring everything out. Bring it all at once." Meanwhile, the quilt maker kept her word and continued to add a piece every time he gave away a gift to the king's quilt. The king kept on giving, and at last there was no one left in the town who had not received something from the king. He began to give his gifts to the entire world. But before he left, the king promised the quilt maker he would send a sparrow to let her know when he gave everything away. Morning and night, the wagons rolled out of town, piled high with his things, and for years and years, messengers of tiny sparrows returned to the quilt maker to keep her untaxed. All the items to all the people of the world made everyone so happy. So on and on, the quilt maker worked, and piece by piece, the king's quilt grew more and more beautiful. Finally, the last sparrow came with the report that the last gift was given. She knew that this was the time to go down and search for the king. After a long search, she finally found him. But the royal king's clothes were all tattered, and his toes poked through his boots. Yet his eyes glittered with joy, and his laugh was wonderful and thunderous. The quilt maker unfolded the quilt from her bag. It was so beautiful that hummingbirds and butterflies fluttered about him. Standing on tiptoe, she tenderly wrapped it around him. "What's this?" cried the king. "As I promised long ago, the day came when you yourself were poor. Only then could I give you a quilt." The king's great sunny laugh made green apples fall and flowers turn his way. "But I am not poor," he said. "I may look poor, but in truth my heart is full to bursting, filled with memories of all the happiness I've given and received. I'm the richest man I know." "Nevertheless," the quilt maker said, "I made this quilt just for you." "Thank you," he replied. "I'll take it, but only if you'll accept one last gift." There was one treasure that he had saved, and he brought down his own throne for the quilt maker. "This is quite comfortable, just the thing you will need for long days of sewing." From that day on, the king came to the quilt maker's house from the clouds daily, and the quilt maker continued to sew beautiful quilts that she would not sell, and by night the king would take them down to the town where he would search for the poor and downhearted, and never happier than when he was giving something away. The end. We hope you enjoyed this story.
Please rise as you're willing and able for our opening hymn, number 318 in the hymnal, We Would Be One. Thank you. The offering is the sacrament of the free church. It is supported by the voluntary generosity of all who join us. The offering will now be given and received in grateful appreciation of our shared hopes and values. I guess we need a lantern person. Now is a time in our service where we may share our joys and concerns with each other. If you have a joy or concern to share, please raise your hand. An usher will bring a microphone. Just give us your first name and a joy or concern you wish to share with us. As is our tradition, I'll light our first candle, this time in commemoration of the work that's going on to correct the injustices of the world, some of which you'll be hearing about this morning.
Hi, I'm Angel. Actually, I have a really horrible concern involving Sam. It looks like we're going to have to file theft by contractor as her building project has gone belly up. You know, it's breaking my heart. It's my fault. I feel it was someone I trusted, someone I counted on, someone that helped us in the beginning, helped build Sam's ramp, and now a lot of her money is gone, and the house the addition isn't even half done. So, you know, we're hoping that we can find someone, or that the person Sam thinks she found to make it better will. Thank you.
My name is Carlin, and I would like a candle of joy. We finished teaching the OWL program this weekend for a group of the middle schooler into high schoolers. It was great fun, very educational, and a real pleasure.
My name is Anita, and I just want to joy. I just got back from a 5-day vacation with my mother, and it was absolutely wonderful. So we got along, didn't fight, you know, stuff like that. So it was a great vacation.
My name is Robin, and I just want to remind people that the heritage of Unitarian Universalists has been very strong in social justice, and that there's going to be an election coming up next week, and I understand that only one person in five is going to be voting, so that means that your vote is going to count for five people, and I would tell you who I would want you to vote for, but that's something we can't do in church. But if you want to talk to me afterwards, I'll give you some few ideas. Take advantage of our privilege of voting.
I would like to light a candle of joy. Mark Brewer is our newest member.
Well, I would like to light a candle. I don't know if it's a joy or a concern, but a candle. This is for our daughter Polly and her son Jacob, that she has just gone through a very long and bitter divorce, and the divorce is finally finalized on Thursday, and we hope that she and her ex-husband can just go about their lives now. And a last candle for the joys and concerns which we keep in our hearts. Please remain seated for our centering hymn, which would be hymn number 112, Do You Hear?
Of your soul, hear the cry. still. Hear the heart's call to will. Hear a sigh starting thrill in your soul, in your soul. A place where you stand, do they understand? Do you hear, oh my friend? Do you hear, do you hear? Dreams, all the dares, all the sighs, all the prayers, they are yours, mine and theirs. Do you hear, do you
Good morning. This is a reading from the book Roots for Radicals by Ed Chambers. Ed is the recently retired executive director of the Industrial Areas Foundation. IAF was founded in 1940 by the famous organizer Saul Alinsky. It was intended to train leaders and organizers in the art of social change in a democratic society. Ed is writing about why we need to build power for the common good. He describes in this reading the tension between the world as it is and the world as it should be. I read, "To be moral is to struggle in the arena of the world as it is, while guided by the values of the world as it should be. Not to go off shopping or trading online or sit in pews on the sideline of life saying, ain't things awful. Operating in reality while ignoring values leads to cynicism, division, and coercion. Holding on to values, disconnected from the real world, robs morality of credibility and relevance. When the tension between the two worlds collapses in either direction, humanity's integrity collapses with it, because we were created to live in between." The great poet Goethe's final letter describes the successful life as, quote, "judicious surrender to the natural rhythm of opposing tendencies." Surrendering to the inevitable tension between the two worlds is the true moral destiny of humanity. To do that requires that we develop the social knowledge, courage, and politicalness to live with others inside the polarities of self-interest and self-sacrifice, power and love, change and harmony, and imagination and hope. Taking responsibility for our destiny means deliberately embracing the fearsome creative tension that comes when we choose to live resolutely in between the world as it is and the world as it should be, refusing to be condemned either to materialism or false idealism as a way of life. Living well with the two-world tension is the root of true radicalism. I come to you today in several capacities. I used to work for Ed Chambers. He was my boss for about 10 years. I was an IAF organizer for those first 10 years of my career when I was very young. I am now a volunteer with Common Ground. I'm one of its founders, I'm its treasurer, and I'm on its board. I'm also a small business owner for the last 28 years. I'm a co-owner of a company called the James Company, and we help churches and religious organizations raise money throughout the United States. I'm a member of Jesu Catholic Parish on the Marquette campus and a pledging friend of First Unitarian on the East Side. I'm bi-religious. Let me begin this morning by telling you about Common Ground. Common Ground is an organization of congregations, schools, nonprofits, unions, small businesses, and neighborhood associations from throughout metropolitan Milwaukee. We operate in four counties, Milwaukee, Ozaukee, Washington, and Waukesha. Our mission is to build nonpartisan political power for the common good. We operate in the tension between the world as it is and the world as it should be that Ed was describing in his book. We are ordinary people trying to make extraordinary change. Common Ground is part of this IEF network, which has been in existence for 60 years, and there are now 56 affiliates in five different countries across the world. Some 150 volunteers spend 3 years building Common Ground, slowly, carefully, methodically. When we officially constituted ourselves on April 13th of 2008, 2,300 delegates from across the region came together at the Midwest Airlines Center to begin the public phase of our existence. Since then, we have become involved in various issue campaigns, such as expanding the City of Milwaukee's Summer Youth Jobs Program for disadvantaged youth, supporting a drive for affordable housing in Ozaukee County, developing a health insurance cooperative for small businesses, nonprofits, the self-employed, and unions, my favorite issue campaign so far, redeveloping Sherman Park, and our current Faces of Foreclosure campaign, which I'll be talking about this morning. We tackle multiple issues, mostly regional issue campaigns, which come from the bottom up, which come from our membership. We do numerous face-to-face relational meetings, our secret weapon, small group listening sessions, and extensive research before we begin a campaign. Our iron rule of organizing is that we never do anything for anyone they can do for themselves. We do not advocate for others. We organize people to make their own change. We look for leaders who have anger and want to act on the values that guide their vision of the world as it should be. To give you a better idea of how Common Ground operates, I will describe our Faces of Foreclosure campaign. This issue came to us from the ground up. It started on 22nd and Center at Greater New Birth Congregation, one of our member units. They were conducting a door-to-door neighborhood walk, talking with residents in the area and asking them what kind of conditions they wanted to change in their neighborhood. On the walk, they found over 60 abandoned, deteriorated properties in a 10-block area. Their research on these properties led to the discovery that six of these properties were owned by Deutsche Bank, based in Frankfurt, Germany. Why, they asked, would Deutsche Bank, with no branches in Milwaukee, own six vacant properties on the north side of Milwaukee? Greater New Birth and other leaders from Common Ground spent the next 6 months researching the issue of vacant, abandoned, deteriorating properties, which are present throughout the metro area, including Waukesha. The result of Common Ground research led to the publication of the Faces of Foreclosure report. I have copies of it today if you'd like to look at one, but this is the result. This 15-page paper is a result of all of that research. The essence of our research is this. There are hundreds of vacant and abandoned properties throughout the region, with the vast majority of them being in the city of Milwaukee. They are owned or controlled by large national banks, which speculated in subprime mortgages. These are mortgages with high interest rates sold to people with less than prime credit. The three largest owners of these properties in Metro Milwaukee, and in fact the entire state of Wisconsin, are Wells Fargo Bank, U.S. Bank, and Deutsche Bank. Other owners are banks like Citibank, JP Morgan Chase, and Bank of America. There are no locally based community banks on this list, and you'll find the list in the report. These vacant and in many cases deteriorating properties are impacting all of us, no matter where we live. Through the decrease in our regional housing values and the taxes we all pay to take care of the consequences of this deterioration. The other outrage in all of this is that these large national banks receive billions of dollars in federal bailout funds to keep them afloat. Now, if you are the kind of person who likes to understand the details of how our financial system melted down and accelerated the current recession, which is hurting all of us, I recommend two books. House of Cards by William Cohan, which describes the collapse of Bear Stearns, and The Looting of America by Les Leopold, which puts in simple terms the casino-like gambling system that brought about the current recession. Be prepared to get very angry as you understand the greed and dishonesty which drove the world of subprime mortgages, collateralized debt obligations, credit default swaps, and the rest of the insanity. This is the world as it is, and our foreclosure campaign is a small effort to bring the world more in line with our vision of the world as we want it to be, but have to have the power to make it be. In our campaign, we are attempting to hold accountable the three largest banks which now own many of these vacant and abandoned properties. Common Ground wants the leaders of Wells Fargo Bank, U.S. Bank, and Deutsche Bank to each agree to do three things. Number one, to stop selling properties to slum landlords, speculators, and rent-to-own scammers, and instead sell them to responsible owners. They've literally dumped hundreds of these properties back into the market to these kind of buyers. Number two, to pay for the demolition of the properties they own now or have owned that are beyond repair. And number three, to each put up $25 million, which can be used for the rehabilitation and redevelopment of properties which they still own or have already sold. In this entire subprime financial crisis, no one is holding these and other large national banks accountable for what they've done in our communities. For example, the city of Milwaukee just got $25 million in federal neighborhood stabilization funds to buy, demolish, or rehab the hundreds of properties left after this subprime mess. But again, it is our federal tax dollars cleaning up the mess, and the banks have not put up a dime. And these banks are not poor. Collectively, in 2009, these three banks alone made billions and billions in profits. Now, this is more than a political issue. In my mind, this is a moral issue, an economic justice issue. Subprime mortgages were predatory loans pushed and sold to the most vulnerable people in our society. Salespeople went door to door in many areas selling mortgages and refinanced home equity loans with deceptive and fraudulent sales pitches. The elderly, the poor, the unsophisticated were the victims. We are all paying for the consequences of these immoral and amoral actions. The anger that we feel in injustice is the fuel that we need to make the world as it is into the world as it should be and the world as we want it to be. But in the world as it is, we need to organize the power of our people and our money to make this happen. No change will occur with these three banks or any other bank if we are not willing to confront them on moral, legal, political, and economic grounds to make them do the right thing. We may have to apply our economic pressure by moving our money and making various government officials move public money in order to get these banks to sit down and negotiate. Organizing people to change the world and work for the common good is very hard work, but it brings the kind of meaning and purpose to life that I have found both invigorating and satisfying. Your congregation will have the opportunity to participate in Common Ground on Tuesday night of this coming week, March 30th, from 6:30 to 8 p.m. here at church. Leaders of Common Ground in your congregation will be conducting a listening session. This session is an opportunity for you to discuss the issues that make you angry, primarily issues in Waukesha County and metropolitan Milwaukee, where we might be able to make a difference. I encourage you to attend. Listening carefully is one of the first steps to building power. I end with one of my favorite descriptions of the anger we need to find within ourselves in order to shape the world as we want it to be. C.S. Lewis writes, "The anger I am describing is not a peevish fit of temper, but just, generous, scalding indignation. It passes not necessarily at once, but does pass into embracing, exalting, re-welcoming love. Such anger is the fluid that love bleeds when you cut it." Thank you for the opportunity to speak with you today, and I'll be happy to answer questions during the polylog.
Please rise as you're willing and able and sing with us hymn number 131, "Love Will Guide Us." Welcome your questions for Bob and your commentary. And if you have a question or comment, please raise your hand and the officer will bring you a mic. State your first name and give us your question or comment.
Yes.
Hi, I'm Kira. Say you and your family bank with one of those banks that you mentioned. What kind of letter would you, or do you have some sort of cohesive campaign to address your, as a customer, needs from that bank?
Oh, yeah. I'm a business banker at Wells Fargo. I've been a business banker at Wells Fargo for years. I'm a stockholder in Wells Fargo. I'm a stockholder in U.S. Bank. We have these yellow cards that you'll see at the listening session, and I have a few today. We are asking people to fill out their cards and tell us where they bank. We've collected probably 500 of them so far. Our goal is to collect over 1,000. Our first step is to find out where our people and our supporters bank. We haven't told people yet we're ready to move money. And that's one of the actions that we'll take if the banks refuse to negotiate with us. So we're not asking people to move their money yet. We're just finding out where they bank so that when we do decide, and if we have to decide to move money, both personal money and institutional money, we know what kind of power we have to do this. So thanks for asking. Give me a chance to hold up my yellow card. Good. Thank you. I'll be in the social hall drinking coffee if you want to talk about this privately.
We're ready for our closing.
Our closing words today are by Mark Morrison Reed. The central task of the religious community is to unveil the bonds that bind each to all. There is a connectedness, a relationship discovered amid the particulars of our own lives and the lives of others. Once felt, it inspires us to act for justice. It is the church that assures us that we are not struggling for justice on our own, but as members of a larger community. The religious community is essential, for alone our vision is too narrow to see all that must be seen, and our strength too limited to do all that must be done. Together, our vision widens and our strength is renewed. Please stand for our closing hymn.
Go in peace.
That was a good hymn, huh?
Thank you for coming.
That was a good piece, yeah. Thanks. Oh, Jerry, are you a friend of Roger Pugh's?
Yes, I am.
Oh, okay. Yeah, do you belong to UU's?
Yeah, we belong to the Seward.
Seward, yeah. He's mentioned your name today.
Yeah, right.
Because he has this group called UU's United for Social Justice.
Yeah, I'm aware of that.
Good. Nice to meet you.
Yeah. Well, interestingly, we do have our mortgage with Wells Fargo.
That's right.
We have our personal mortgage with Wells Fargo.
So do I.
Yeah. Well.
I showed the talent.
It got lifted.
Sorry.
It's all right. It all worked out fine.